Honorable Chairman, Honorable Tabekulu, Prince Zulu, and Honorable Matlanyana. No apologies from the Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Apologies for the Minister. There is cabinet today in Pretoria. That's where he is. And apologies for the Deputy Minister as well.
Today's agenda, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, you have received a notice that we are only considering the briefing from the department on the strategic plan and the annual performance plan for 2012-2013 financial year. But we have been in consultation with the secretary and the DG since last time. We complained to the DG that we never received the green paper as a committee. We have been hearing about it being debated in public, but the committee has never formally received it. So we agreed that we are going to start by receiving the green paper, and then we consider the strategic plan and the APP thereafter. We also have received a view from the DG about Ingonyama Transport's APP that's missing, even though the strategic plan is available. So we have agreed that we will not consider Ingonyama Transport's presentation today. We'll set another day. I know that it cuts our day or our program short. But unfortunately, it's not of our own making. You will recall, honorable members, that the Ingonyama Transport last year was asked to present its APP. And when they did, it was faulty, and they were told to take it back and fix it and bring it back. And they never brought it back. So it will be an abnormality or anomaly if we consider their APP this year without having seen the APP last year. So we will deal with them at a separate, different time. For today, we will have the green paper, the strategic plan, and the APP of the department. Thank you very much. Are we agreed on the agenda? The agenda. Nkosi Mandela proposed we adopt the agenda. And the second, Chief Whip, thank you very much. Oh, this machine does not recognize Chief Whip. the second is Honorable Japan. Kubilek Dialam Segazi, Gugui. Oh, by the way, honorable members, Honorable Ndapane has requested to be released early. He's rushing to a meeting of a delegation of the department that is sitting here that is going to his constituency. So he has to take a plane early to go there. Thank you very much. Honorable DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm honored to be honorable today with the agenda Chairperson adopted. I'm going to invite honorable the taking EDG Uvusi Mahlangu to Jefferson with the Green Paper having been in the public domain, we propose that we present the principles of the Green Paper rather than every specific detail of it. And then we report to the committee the progress we have made. The Green Paper was out in the public domain since October last year. Public consultation closed in December. We have been engaging with various stakeholders in the sector since then, and we continue to do so. So I'm going to invite DDG Mahlangu to present the principles of the Green Paper and the progress we've made to date. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, DG. Morning, Chairperson and the members, colleagues. All protocol observed. Mine is just to introduce the paper. Like the DG has said, that it was published. It's just a question of recapping on the key principles that underpin the paper itself. It talks about basically the de-racialization of the rural economy, then democratic and equitable land allocation and use across gender, race, and class, and the strict production discipline for the guaranteed national food security. Basically, here is to ensure that whatever is happening with the new policy that will come, those principles are there, and the nation knows exactly what is the intention of the department when coming to the land reform. We, like, again, what the DG has said, we receive a lot of comments and inputs after the publication. So I think it will be better, as proposed, that we just maybe take through the committee members since the publication, what is it exactly that we receive and the progress that has been made so far. The progress so far, maybe just a quick background, is that the deadline for the submission of the comments on the Green Paper on Land Reform was extended to the 31st of December 2011, and subsequently the department was required to consolidate comments and submissions and develop policy and legislation proposal. What happens once we received all the inputs that were sent through electronically as well as our provincial offices as well as national office? We worked on them and consolidated them and presented a preliminary report to the minister, who then met with what we call the National Reference Group, NREG, on the land reform in November last year, and constituted specific technical working groups in respect of certain policy proposals made by the department in the Green Paper. Most of the inputs, after receiving them and categorizing them, it was clear that we needed to categorize them into a certain proposal, and we came up with the six working groups that are supposed to be looking into this. The major contribution were issues around the Land Management Commission, the Land Rights Management Board and Committees, the Land Valua General, the three-tier tenure system, communal tenure, and legislative amendments. Those were the six groups that were formed by the working group. And then under each and every group, we consolidated the information and we came up with the findings. One, it was the issue around the amendment of the current Act 126 of 93, formulating in order to formulate a new Act of Parliament, which could take longer due to long-winded procedure. Basically, the inputs they were proposing that we amend the Act in order to form the Land Management Commission, although there was some skepticism to say this might be a long process. If this goes ahead, the LMC will be a creature of the statute. There was also general consensus about certain issues of the LMC. Various opinions were made regarding the functions, powers of the LMC, for instance, whether it's an advisory, coordination, regulatory, auditing, and a reference point, powers of the Land Management Commission to subpoena anyone, as well as invalidating of the title deeds. Written submission have been received in all this. The committee that is working on this is consolidating the information and will come up with a clear proposal as to what needs to be done. There were also other issues raised there, whether the LMC is similar to the restitution constitution. So here basically I think there should be a clear distinction between the proposed LMC as well as the current existing restitution commission. Whether will the LMC do a land audit on all land, state and private land? Will the function of the LMC be quasi-judicial or administrative nature, filling gaps in the green paper? Reference was made to previous green papers. Role of the public works in the LMC, duplication of their roles and existing. So apart from the inputs of what people think, they also raise questions that the department or the working group must also respond to when they finalize this work. Then the second group is a land rights management board. It had the following policy proposal starting from the Land Management Commission and the Land Rights Management Board to be consolidated to avoid possible overlap. So people who read the principles, they felt that maybe there might be a similar function between the two, the LMC and the LRMB. Whether the LMP must be a voluntary association, all stakeholders that represented at the board and the committee level. The Land Rights Management Board to have mediation role on the tenure disputes on commercial farms provided it occurs at local level. So there must be a drilled local level whereby this board can function if it's agreed upon. Also, there must also be a provincial stakeholder forums, and then the board to have a clear monitoring role on the tenure disputes and evictions and clear monitoring standards to be developed. So there was kind of agreements, although there were questions. That's what the working groups will be working on. They will be focusing again on the questions that are raised that needs to be clarified and also the specific proposal, policy proposal that the inputs were looking into. So there will be lots of research that they will be coming in. So there was also a proposal to say that agri-villages in commercial farming areas to only cater for current and the ex-farm workers and their families. They should not be rural settlement in the settlement of people with no connection to the farming way of life. Part of the things that was picked up under the Land Rights Management Board is the agri-village. So when the issue was discussed, it was agreed but upon one condition that it consider only farm workers and people who are connected with their living on the farm. So that's going to also be researched further. Strategy, there was nothing at that time. And then there was an issue around legislation in the discussion that the Land Tenure Security Bill should constitute a point of departure. However, the issue still needs to be taken further by the working group. Like I said, that there still needs to be a lot of research that will be done under this proposed establishment of the Land Rights Management Board. Then the third one was the Office of the Valuer General. Here, the overriding consideration or objectives for the Office of the Valuer General is to ensure that the state obtains the value for money for public resources. It's in the public interest that the state has at its disposal appropriate institution with the mandate and capacity to render independent and objective advice on matters relating to the valuation of land and property. Land and property markets must be both efficient and equitable. For instance, detailed information about how these markets work must be collected and analyzed to aid policy making by the state and consumption and investment decision by the household and firms. Valuation industry must be well regulated, operate according to the best practice in terms of the norms and standards, and is sensitive to the South African environment. So these were the objectives that underpin the Office of the Valuer General. The work that has been done so far is to consider whether the Office of the Valuer General is supposed to be something that is within the state or is something that is independent or is going to be like any other independent organization out there. So the team is also working on this to advise properly the department based on the inputs received, the interpretation of those inputs, and to say what is it, how exactly this office, the proposed Office of the Valuer General, can be formed. Then the fourth one is the three-tier tenure system. The working group met somewhere in January. The terms of reference are developed for specialists here, research, analysis, case studies, and then legal review on the proposed limitation on land holding or land ceilings. The further two R's were circulated for policy and legislative finalization of the work on the ownership of the land by the funeral. So it's not only looking at the land holdings or the land selling, but it's also looking at the land by foreign ownership. There's a lot of work that was proposed here to be researched in order for a policy proposal to be developed here. Why? Because most of the inputs, I think they didn't cover the three-tier system. Maybe it was one area which was more complicated, but the team was tasked to go and dig and do more research and also come up with a policy proposal around this one. Then the fifth one is the communal tenure and legislation, which is to consider legislative amendments linked to the Green Paper. Consequent to the ongoing work by other work streams, the group was tasked with focusing on the amendments of the CPA Act, the Restitution Land Rights Act, a review of CLARA. Maybe just before, let me go to the last one, because there was working together with the next group, which is the last group, the communal tenure and legislation, where it was proposed that that group, group number five, the legislation working group, decided to combine with the communal tenure because of the legislative amendment of the CPA Act and the development of to replace CARA. So they are going to extend their scope in such a way that they look across even the amendment the act that can replace the CARA, so that they don't just deal with one aspect, but every aspect of legislation. And then here we also felt that there should be terms of reference for the research to be appointed to analyze of the communal tenure system in South Africa, elsewhere, alternative tenure options and conversion models. Specialist studies and analysis is further required on appropriate landholding entities and their relationship with the traditional and local authorities. These are basically the things that people who were consolidating the inputs that were get as a result of a publication were proposing to the minister. So basically, they were basically informing the department that there's still too much further work to be done from the inputs that needs to be researched and then be consolidated and then put a proper proposal to the minister. The work is ongoing. The minister should be receiving, I think, the second draft of the report within this next month, so that we can prepare to finalize all the inputs and consolidate it to legislative or policy proposal. Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The only point I want to add, Chairperson, is that given the nature of this work and the complexity of land reform by its very nature, the view that the department has taken is that we are not going to go the conventional route of moving from a green paper, consultation, analysis, and then coming up with a white paper. But rather, in the six thematic areas, if we complete the work, for instance, to our satisfaction and the satisfaction of the stakeholders, because this is a very consultative process. We are not working alone. We are working with the sector. We've got organized agriculture. We've got commodity organizations. We've got civil society organizations. We've got the sectors, professional sectors involved, like your valuers. We've got universities and so on. If we're done, for instance, with the work around the establishment of the Office of the Valuer General, we would want to proceed with that particular aspect of policy, get to cabinet, get it approved, and then we proceed to the next level, which is a draft bill on the enabling legislation to establish the Office of the Valuer General. Similarly, we would want to take the same posture with regard to the Land Management Commission. If we feel that there is sufficient consensus for us to move forward with the establishment of the Land Management Commission, there's consensus on the powers and functions of the LMC with the stakeholders, we will move to cabinet, get the policy approved, and then begin with the process of drafting the enabling legislation for the establishment of the Land Management Commission. We move to the three tier system. Chairperson, the three tier system, as you know, The first part of it deals with the land that belongs to the state and local municipalities. We are proposing that it should not be sold. There should be a clear policy around that particular area, and consider that there are three different spheres of government with different powers in terms of the constitution. We can't impose certain things on provinces and municipalities, and therefore we need to reach consensus around that with them. Then we deal with the issue of foreign land ownership. We believe that there's sufficient consensus across the board that foreign land ownership must be regulated. We're not saying foreigners can't own land in South Africa, but we're saying it must be regulated. And there's a feeling generally across the board, across all sectors, that we must regulate it. And we actually have a draft bill in place, so we can potentially go to cabinet to get the policy approved and come to parliament to this committee to get the draft bill also tabled and debated and approved in parliament. And then you've got communal tenure. The constitutional court judgment that questions certain elements of the Communal Land Rights Act. Not the entire act. I think that's very, very, very important to note that the Constitutional Court did not render the entire act unconstitutional. It rendered certain sections of the act unconstitutional. So we have explored alternatives to the part of CLARA that were declared unconstitutional by the Constitutional Court. We have consulted with the National House of Traditional Leaders. We have consulted with traditional leaders in general. We have consulted with the Contralesa, the proposal that we are putting on the table. They seem traditional leadership institutions in the main seem to be quite amenable to what we are proposing, because in the main, we are proposing that just like we are proposing in the three-tier system, that state land and public land should not be sold. The proposal we are putting also with regard to communal land is that it should not also be privatized in the form of titling, as has happened in Kenya, as has happened in many other parts of Africa and possibly South America, where people have where indigenous land, the so-called indigenous land, has been titled. Everybody has been given title deeds, and people have sold the land and they have lost it and they are left with nothing. So what we are saying is that we are proposing to survey all the land, the outer boundaries of all communal land, so that we know that the Madiba clan, this is their total land area. Within that particular Madiba clan, we're also saying each and every household should know what is the extent of their residential plots, what is the extent of their arable land. We must demarcate communal grazing for everybody, but we must also start saying, where are the graveyards, where are the public sites for facilities such as schools, such as clinics, all the public amenities. We are also saying, we must also determine where are our business sites. In other words, we are saying, in every area under a traditional authority, there must be a communal general plan that demarcates, that regulates land use, so that people don't build anything and everything everywhere. So that there is control in terms of land allocation, there is control in terms of land use. That is what, in the main, we are proposing. And I'm saying we've put tentatively these suggestions to the traditional leaders. They seem to be amenable. There's a national reference group comprised of various sectors that are affected by the Green Paper. And there seems to be consensus, but we believe that I think with the Office of the Valuer General, the Land Management Commission, and the rest of the work, we are likely to be done with most of the work by May, June, maybe at cabinet level. But I think with the communal land tenure, we need a little bit more time than compared to the rest of the other policy thematic areas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, honourable members, this is an opportunity to engage with the progress report. If there are questions or comments, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Honourable Chairperson, thank you also for facilitating the progress report on the Green Paper. Chair, I want to say at the outset that I don't believe that our mandate is to receive progress reports of proposed legislation. And what I would really like to see is more exposure to the thematic areas for the six groups that are discussing these issues, especially when you consider what the Director General has said, that there's a proposal that instead of concluding the work on the Green Paper and then presenting it to for public exposure and input and then move to the White Paper, that they're looking at a more piecemeal kind of approach to the implementation of the overall plan of the Green Paper. We would definitely need to be exposed to the work and the research and consultation with those six thematic areas. So when we have reports in future, we would like to see the specifics about what's coming out of those groups, because we can't be led to believe that these discussions are going ahead and they are fruitful and they're happening in silos and the one group doesn't know what the other. The only group where there is some integration or cross-pollination is now the communal tenure and legislation group. The others could be operating in silos and we as a committee don't understand what taking place there. So without belaboring the point, I think we need to be a lot more integrally involved, because rural development and land reform will fall or stand on the success of this piece of legislation, this proposed piece of legislation. I'm also concerned that when we talk and we hear reports, we hear about a three-tier land ownership model, where it's actually four tiers, and the DG didn't say anything about private land holding and limited extent. Because there are four precepts of land tenure system, it's not a three-tier system. So we must consider holistically this whole piece of legislation. And, you know, the last issue that the DG spoke about, communally owned land, and even foreign land, he implied that there's sort of agreement about state and public land that it won't be sold and will be leasehold, and there's sort of consensus that foreign-owned land will be regulated, and I think that there is pretty much large consensus on that. But to be given the feedback that there's pretty much consensus around communally owned land, we've spoken to controversy, we've spoken to traditional leaders, it's not good enough. It's really not good enough for us as legislators to get that kind of feedback. Is specific for about this piece of legislation, especially considering that we've now expanded the horse after the cart after the horse bolted a long time ago. This is the first time we've had any meaningful exchange on this. So we are skeptical, and there's a lack of trust as far as I'm concerned with the department on this Green Paper already. So I view much of this with skepticism.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to thank the department for the presentation on the green paper, Chair. But I would really spy the communal land is concerned. I see they make mention to CPAs on the green paper, and yet they talk of all the stakeholders which must be represented. I haven't seen the DG has spoken much about traditional leaders who are an integral part of land, but have had no real representation in the document. I think if you can say to us as to how is that so. The Honorable Prodigy has said that it lacks details. I think that's the thing that we would like to see come up on the screen there. But maybe also to get covered on the, we talk of the land reform principles. It says the equitable land allocation. And I think what has really stalled land distribution has been the willing buyer, willing seller policy. What has been the discussion around that? And what is going to be done to speed up the process? Thanks.
No other figures. Go ahead, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My apologies. I omitted to mention the work that has been done on the land ceiling. There's a great deal of work that has been done. A lot of research has been done. International experience considered. There's empirical evidence that has been explored in that particular area. A whole range of groupings are involved there. I can also allow the leader amongst us here of that particular group, the acting DVG, Leona Achary, to speak to that in more detail to just assist the Honorable Trollip and myself. On the CPA Amendment Act, certainly, we have looked at that. We are exploring options, including amendment of the Act. Among other things, we are saying, especially where land has been claimed under the Restitution Act, we are saying whether, we are asking ourselves whether it is appropriate for government to set up legal entities in communal areas where the land was lost by a clan and a village was affected, but when land is restored, it is given to a few villagers entitled, and another entity is created within an entity, which in our experience has caused a whole lot of conflict and social instability in communities. We are looking at that. We're certainly looking at that. The communal land tenure, we have said, we believe that there is a whole lot more work that needs to be done. It is not clear-cut. It is not straightforward. The green paper may not have a whole lot of detail, but Honorable Tolley, you are quite correct. If you're talking about the four tier, you're talking about state land and public land. Part of that is communal land, as much as we are not very specific about it. We are saying we are doing more work. We have done a review of communal land tenure.
both locally and we have considered international experience, and there will be a separate policy position on that one. As we have said, we are not going to have a white paper on all the thematic areas, including the communal tenure. But we are saying we need a little bit more time to consult much more widely. And certainly, with the evidence we have gathered in the form of position papers prepared, I think there would be appropriate time for us to be able to share with the members of the portfolio committee. Honorable Chair, with your permission, if I may just ask Acting DDG Achary to speak a little bit more on the land selling.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, DDG. No, I think in terms of that particular work stream on the three tier, excluding the communal land issue, firstly, I think in terms of the representation, it has representation across all groups, across the unions, across the traditional authorities as well. As well as commodity sectors are included in the group, and there's a whole list of those people. In terms of the land ceilings, remember that as we discussed, the issue of private land would limit the extent, which is the proposal in the Green Paper. It does not only emerge with land ceilings. Land ceilings is but one option that is being looked at, and a lot of work has already been done. There has been external examination of international trends in this particular area, including countries like West Bengal, Namibia, etc., etc. So a lot of work has gone into that, and research has been done, and extensive documents have been prepared. However, we still have some work that we are doing in terms of that particular area. But within that issue of private land with limited extent, we're also looking at issues of fair compensation models with regard to private agricultural land sales, where the issue of the willing buyer, willing seller model will obviously also come into play. And information is available in terms of that. We're looking at the issue of the right of first refusal again in terms of the state. We're looking at the partnership value chain. So not only looking at how the limited extent can be implemented, but also looking at how it would add in terms of sustainability and productivity within the country. We're also looking at successful equity scheme models in the country, taxation proposals in support of land reform, and then different tenure options are also being investigated as well in terms of the private land issue with the most extent. Those are just some of the areas, DG, that are being covered under this particular work stream.
It appears that the Honorable Tolip was correct to request some detailed progress reports on the thematic areas, because the more the department speaks on the matter, the more it appears that there's so much work is being done, and there are many areas being considered. It will help us teach you so that we do a good job as well, because our involvement in this process should not be limited to legislative process. Because sometimes when you are involved with the legislative process, as we discovered after Clara was struck off by the Constitutional Court, that there is a tendency to look at the detail of the legislation and not the interconnectedness of that legislation with other areas and other pieces of legislation, both that are being considered and those that are already at work. Take, for instance, the traditional courts bill. If you're dealing with the traditional courts and what they themselves think the traditional leaders must do in their courts and the obligation of citizens in relation to traditional courts, you now realize that other pieces of legislation that apply may contradict those requirements in the traditional courts. So it is important that we consider the whole picture rather than pieces of legislation only. So I would appeal to you that we continuously have this kind of engagement. And it may be better, Honorable Mashlangu, that not only the draft proposal submitted to the minister in the form of a report would be sufficient for our peoples, but also those pieces of work that has been done in the work group or working group. Because before they make that contribution to the team that is consolidating a report, that raw material will help us, because then it will give us an idea what are the issues they are considering, which may be summarized out of the report at the end. So it will help us a great deal to do that. Thank you very much. Honourable members?
Chair, not to speak after you on, I think, a very good summary. You picked up on the issues that were raised previously. There are a couple of comments that I want to add to what you just said. You know, these four tiers, and I think they must be kept as four tiers, and we mustn't interchange state and public land with communal land, because they mustn't be confused. Communal land is held in ownership of the state in trust by traditional leadership. So I think we must keep this as four tiers and not interchange it with three tiers, because as the chairperson said, traditional courts bill legislation that's in the pipeline, as well as spatial land use management, management bill that's also in the pipeline, can have the effect of relegating people who live in communal areas to an extra or ex-constitutional existence. We're a unitary state. We have wall-to-wall municipalities. All land now is under the authority of municipalities, whereas previously communally owned land and farmland wasn't. That's a constitutional provision, and we've got to avoid having certain provisions that allow people to exist in an extra constitutional situation. Our responsibility as legislators is to make sure there's equitable constitutional rights applicable to everybody, and all land, all four tiers of that land, is going to be affected by this legislation. So to give one special status and others relegated status is going to be problematic. And Chair, none of us hold a monopoly on wisdom. And all this work and all this research has been spoken about. We need to read it so that we can catch up. Otherwise, we have our own one-dimensional attitudes towards this thing. So let's have that benefit of that wisdom so that we can make informed decisions.
I think we can dispense with the green paper, because it's work in progress, both for yourselves and for ourselves. We would be happy to, if you like, it would be helpful to engage on a quarterly basis. Would be too long. Perhaps so many horses would have bolted if we say quarterly. Why don't we agree on a monthly basis, maximum monthly basis, on an ongoing basis? Thank you very much. Can we move on now to the strategic plan and the APP?
Thank you.
Also, of course, the Honourable Ntaphane, one of the rules again.
Thank you, Chairperson. As DDG Mashia sets up just a little bit of context, we have always presented year in, year out strategic plan to Parliament, but there was a practice note issued by National that gave a framework for tabling strategy plan and annual performance plan by provincial and national departments. This practice note came into effect in the previous financial year, where we tabled an APP,
it is now much more effective in the current financial year. We have tabled before this APP a strategic plan for 2010-11 to 2013-2014. So there is an effective strategic plan that we have tabled and discussed with this committee, and since last year we have presented an APP. Again this year we are presenting an APP, not another strategic plan, because the mandate has not changed since coming into office of this particular administration. So what DG Mashia will be presenting is an APP focusing on the financial year 2012-2013. Thank you very much.
Mama Mashi, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to the honorable members and the and colleagues. Quickly, the contents of the presentation. Firstly, we'll do the overview, and then I will also talk the strategic overview of our plan, and I will showcase the linkages of the annual performance plan with the Millennium Development Goals and outcomes. And the plan will also outline the priorities for 2012-13 for the department in terms of the five programs, which are administration, geospatial and cadastral services, rural development program, restitution and land reform. Once I have finished with that part, acting CFO will then deal with the finances budget, will reconcile budget allocation for this year with the plan that I'll present. And I think the DG will summarize at the end for conclusion. Thank you, Chairperson. Now, the purpose is to present the APP as DG has outlined. We'll just focus on the APP for this year. Of course, it's aligned to the 3 years MTF and is aligned to our strategic plan that we tabled here. The key thrust of this annual performance plan is that it showcases the contribution of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform in addressing the triple challenges currently facing South Africa, which are poverty, inequality, unemployment, with specific bias to rural areas. And we show in the plan that we will achieve this, addressing these areas through upscaling the implementation of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, and will intensify job creation and socio-economic infrastructure developed. Key documents, planning documents, have been used in compilation of the plan, which are the strategic plan of the department, 2011 to 2014, the State of the Nation Address for 2012, Outcome 7, and the key priorities that were identified in July 2011 Cabinet Lekgotla. We have considered other outcomes, such as Outcome 4, 6, 9, and 10. Together with our outcome 7. The strategic outview outlined in the strategic plan, our vision, mission of the department haven't changed. So our plan, our annual performance plan, addresses strictly that vision of creating vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities. And the plan showcases that we are having a mission of initiating, facilitating, coordinating, and being catalysts in the implementation of integrated rural development program. The strategy that we use as the department is the agrarian transformation strategy. In this plan, the document, we outline that we have reduced the number of strategic objectives. We have actually reduced from the myriad of objectives and indicators that we had, in the previous year. Due to the guidance of this portfolio committee and the Auditor General, because some of our indicators were not measurable and were given that feedback, when AG also came to the portfolio committee, we were made to look at our indicators and objectives. So we rectified those and we actually reduced so that we leave in this plan only key strategic objectives and outputs. We've got about 8 goals as a department, and so on the left side is the goal, and the right side is the strategic objective that links to the goal. The first goal is corporate governance and service excellence through compliance with legal framework that we want to achieve. Now, when we put 2014, we're trying to say by this year we should have achieved a lot in this area, but the work in this improving corporate governance continues. And the objective that seeks to address that goal says compliance with relevant legislation and policies governing the management of public sector. Again, the committee members will remember that last year when we tabled their plan, we had addressed the areas that we want to address as a department to improve corporate governance. So our plan this year showcases that. Strategic goal 2, reform policy, legislative and institutional environment. We intend to again table this year land reform policies and legislation, as some have been maybe mentioned in the green paper that was presented earlier on, and the legislative program that is in the plan outlines that. Strategy goal three says effective land planning and administration that is biased in the rural areas. This strategy goal is addressed in program 5 of the department and programs 3 and 4. It has the objective that says an integrated land-based planning, special information, administrative system to promote equitable, sustainable land use and allocation. For achieving this goal, we had to make sure there are linkages between programs 3, 4, and 5 in the manner that they implement, they design and implement their strategies so that we can achieve that goal. Goal 4 says integrated institutional arrangements for effective corporate governance and stakeholder participation. We acknowledge as a department that we haven't been effective in our stakeholder engagement, governance, and actually ensuring stakeholder participation. That we are addressing through the objective of integrated service delivery facilitation through the coordination of government and the development stakeholders. Again, the plan is going to outline the detail of that. Goal 5 says increased access to and productive use of land. And the strategic objective that addresses that is strategically located land acquired and allocated. The second one is land rights restituted or alternative forms of equitable redress awarded to claimants. The third one is recapitalization and development support provided to land reform beneficiaries and rural communities. This goal is actually implemented by 2 programs, land reform and land restitution. Of course, with participation by some of the programs in program 3. Improved access to affordable and diverse food by 2014. The strategic objectives that seek to implement or address that goal is profiling of rural households that will be enabled so as to improve their food security, socio-economic infrastructure that will be facilitated to improve access to services. That goal is implemented by Program 3 specifically. So that's where we're going to look at the plan of rural infrastructure development, the plan of strict and the plan of work on poverty in the department that are all contributing to that goal. Goal 7 says improve the rural services to support sustainable livelihoods by 2014. And the goal 8 says improve access to sustainable employment and skills development opportunities. Here we want to ensure that the skills development, but more importantly, we want to ensure sustainable economic opportunities in rural areas. Quickly, the linkages with the Millennium Development Goals. Chairperson, we had to ensure that in our planning we look more closely at the MDGs and our contribution to them and ensure that our outputs will help us as a department to achieve both our goals and actually contribute more meaningfully to the Millennium Development Goals. As our department is the coordinator of Outcome 7, we had to showcase that in the plan because our resources go into mobilizing other departments to contribute to the rural development plan. We had to also improve in that area in terms of planning so that we don't just capture it at the level of reporting. So our plan showcases that. And the other outputs, which are outputs 4, 6, 9, and 10, we have again made sure that we contribute to those outcomes of the department and reflect that in the plans, both in the annual performance plan and more largely in the operational plans of the department. Outcome 7 outputs have been integrated into the department's strategic goals, as I've indicated. So I will not just list those. We will see them as we go through the presentation. Key priority areas for 2012-13. As the department, we have prioritized the core service delivery programs, such as restitution, land reform, rural development. And we have also prioritized cadastral services management due to the land register, which is has been our challenge as a department in terms of the state land, that we want to make sure that we deal with that so that our land register will be up to date. And the actual implementation of the e-cadastre program that is actually going to improve the land information systems. I am not going to detail under each program because they in the plan we're going to showcase how what we're doing in these priority areas for the department. But maybe I must mention the importance of transferring all validated claims on state land by the end of 2012. We have, as a department, committed ourselves to ensuring that by 2012 we have transferred and settled the validated claims on state land. We have also completed the settling of compensation claims. The land reform, capitalization of land reform farms, we want to do that so as that our farms can be productive. There's another objective that the committee always quiz us on, the acquisition of strategically located land. We have kept that strategic objective because we feel that there is a need to intensify acquisition of the strategically located land and ensuring productivity on it to contribute to this poverty reduction in the country. Rural development programs, we will showcase in the plan how we roll out, massify rolling out them. And I've explained e-cadastral services management plan. Now I come to the table, which is the part B of the annual report. This is what we table to the portfolio committee, this area, our targets, but then we always table the operational plan to the committee that showcases the details, where we're doing, with what resources. So at this level of the annual performance plan, we show the annual target and the quarterly target condensed. But at the level below this, we show the actual location of these projects and the projects below these strategic objectives. So as DG has indicated, we use the framework to just tape capture it at this, like this, at the annual performance level. Strategic objective one for program one, which is the administration program, is compliance with relevant policies and legislation governing the management of public sector. The indicators there are percentage of budget spent. I will not explain that. I know the members are aware about the importance of making sure we utilize the resources effectively, but more importantly, we should not be underspent or overspent in our budget. We have targeted to be at 25% in quota one as a department, but quota four, we put 100% because we say we should have expended appropriately our budget as a department. The second indicator is percentage of audit management action plans implemented. Honourable members, we decided to capture this indicator here as a department because we want to make sure that we address the issue of negative findings that we always have in the report of the Auditor General. So we have committed as a department that we will make sure we implement audit management plans and will ensure that they are in the performance agreement of senior managers so that everyone has got the responsibility of implementing or addressing the audit issues or audit areas in their business units so that at the end the department can achieve the clean audit target. Third indicator is percentage of funded vacant posts. The norm in the public sector for vacant posts is that they should not be more than 10%. We are aiming as a department also not to have more vacant posts than 10%, vacant posts that are more than 10%. So this is why we're keeping it 10%. It doesn't mean that we want to always make sure that they are vacant posts, but we want to control, balance it, because in the organization, as there are other employees coming in, there are those who are going out. But to ensure that there are causes for causes, we always ensure that our recruitment system addresses that indicator so that we don't become more than 10% in the vacancy rate in the department. The indicator percentage of organizational renewal plan implemented, we also decided to factor the renewal strategy for the department here. And we do not talk about the strategy at this level. We talk precisely about the plan. When we say 50% of the plan, because the renewal strategy that we discussed with the portfolio committee has got elements. There are time milestones. So we say in quarter one, we should have at least implemented and achieved so many of those milestones that are in the renewal plan. And by the end of the year, we should at least have achieved 50%, which means half of what we've targeted to achieve in the renewal strategy, in the renewal plan, we want to have achieved by the end of this year. Because the renewal strategy is 3 years, and we had tabled in the portfolio committee that the renewal strategy is implemented to improve governance, operations, and efficiency in the department so that other line programs can function effectively. So we're looking at issues of policy review procedures, reviewing processes, making sure that there are systems, making sure that there are standardized monitoring mechanisms in the department, making sure that managers sign performance agreements, but also making sure that those performance agreements are meaningful. It's not just a question of compliance. So this is what we're doing in the renewal strategy. We reported that we're starting with it last year, and we are happy to report the progress of that, but we're targeting, because it's a three-year plan, to have achieved 50% of it by the end of this year. The second objective statement is rural development and land reform policies and legislation developed by 2014. In the plan, there is this, the legislative program that says which legislation will be in by which time. But we plan there with two indicators: number of pieces of legislation submitted to Parliament. We said we'll submit a total of 11 in the year 2012-13. And that 11 will be complete at least by the last quarter. The second indicator is number of policies submitted to Cabinet. We targeted 10 for the year 2012-13. And we said that 10 must be finalized in a quarter one and submitted at least to Cabinet. that was the indicators and objectives for Program 1, which is a really administration program that is ensuring governance and administration in the organization. Now I move to the Geospatial and Cadastral Services Program, Program 2. The strategic objective one there is an integrated land planning, spatial information and administration system to promote an equitable, sustainable land use and allocation by 2014. The performance indicators for this program, a number of spatial plans formulated. The department targeted to have formulated 37 spatial plans. But we wanted to know what's going to happen in quarter one, what's going to happen in quarter two. So quarter one, they'll develop the terms of reference. Quarter two, they'll start with the spatial analysis and they complete the project of spatial analysis. And quarter three, there'll be a draft special plans will be completed. And quarter four, we'll have those plans approved and adopted. The second indicator is number of hectares of state land in former homeland surveyed. The annual target is 2.7 million hectares. So we aim to do 800,000 in quarter one, 900,000 in quarter two, 1 million in quarter three. So, but at the end, we'll have covered 2.7 million hectares in this year. Again, Chairperson, here we have made it a special project to make sure that we deal with the issue of surveying state land. The third indicator is number of working days taken to process registerable diagrams, sector and sectoral plans. Here, this indicator was measuring the efficiency of this program. So we wanted to ensure that they take as minimum days to actually finalize the diagrams and plans. So last year it was more than 14 days. So this year we have given them 14 days because this is a national priority, so we want to make sure that they do become more and more efficient as a program. So when you say 14 for the whole year, it's because at least we're reducing the number of days that they take. So this target is informed by their last year's performance. An integrated land planning, spatial information and administration system to promote equitable state land use, still the same objective, but we've got another indicator that says a percentage of state land register verified. Because we're aiming to have an updated land register, we want to verify it, and you know, updating land register Chairperson continues, so we want to make sure that they continue doing the verification. But by quarter three, they must have finished the verification, and we must be able, they must be able to present the report of that. What is it? How does the register look like? How updated is it? Because it's one of the audit areas that we've been found wanting by the AGM. The next indicator is operational e-cadastre. Our annual target is that we want to have the e-cadastre developed by this year. In quarter one, we want to first ensure hardware and software that they are commissioned. And then quarter two, we wanted to ensure application of models developed. So we still now a Chairperson wanting to make sure that all the systems are in place so that we can run with the e-cadastre. Again, we've subjected the e-cadastre to various evaluation processes so that we can kickstart with this commissioning of hardware and software. And we're doing that this quarter. At the end of the year, quarter four, we will be able to say this is the e-cadastre of the department, and it will have been developed, and our land information system will be improved then. The third indicator is number of people trained in geomatics. This indicator, the person addresses our indicator of shortage of technical skills, and we committed as a department that would train would have skills development in geometrics. So we aim to this year to train 60 only. Again, that indicator is based on the resources as well as the performance last year. Now I come to program 3, which is the rural development program. This program is implemented by the Rural Infrastructure Development Program, Social Technical Facilitation Program, and the War on Poverty Program. NARISEC, which is one of our priority programs, is also under Program 3. The objective, strategic objective one there is integrated service delivery facilitated through the coordination of government and development by stakeholders. Integrated service delivery facilitated through the coordination of government and development of stakeholders. But here, Chairperson, what we're trying to address as a department, we also realize that in terms of service delivery forums, we're not doing well yet. We're supposed to strengthen that area so that our coordination can improve. Also want to be able to have these coordination plans so that departments can contribute there. We have the plan as rural development that showcases how other departments contribute to the rural development program. So we started by just targeting to first ensuring functional service delivery forums. So we said by quarter one they should be, or by the end of the year, 93 service delivery forums across the country should be functional. The second objective there is recapitalization and development support provided to land reform beneficiaries. Here, the e-performance indicators are the number of communities associated with agricultural infrastructure services. And the annual target there is 60, which is divided through the four quarters. Profiled rural households are enabled to improve their food security. Because, Chairperson, we are saying that profiling is not done as an end, but is a means to an end. So we want to ensure that those households that we have profiled, we improve their food security. Now, the performance indicator that is set for ourselves, there is a number of households accessing food security interventions. Out of those households that we have profiled, how many are then accessing their food security interventions? Socio-economic infrastructure facilitated to improve access to services. The indicator that we use there to measure our success is the number of households that are accessing socio-economic infrastructure using the CRDP model. We targeted 20,000 households for year 2012-13. And that target is divided amongst the quarter. Of course, it starts with just 3,000, and we intensify it as the year progresses. Third objective 8.1, skills development and sustainable economic opportunities created. The performance measure that we have set there is the number of people assisted to access skills that will improve their rural livelihood. And we have a target of 3,200 people, and quarterly, first quarter it would be 600 people, quarter two it would be 800, quarter three it would be 1,000, and quarter four it would be 800. We also, through this objective, want to create jobs, so we've got the indicator that is saying number of jobs created through the rural development initiative. What we do as a department, we've got the figure for job creation, but we have split these numbers throughout the program. So rural development will contribute with 2,980 jobs in this year. And they will achieve that through the quotas right up to 1,000 at the end of the year, but we must have achieved minimum 2,908 through this program. The last indicator is number of youth skilled through NARUSEC program. Honorable members, we are targeting 10,000 NARUSEC youth in this year of 2012-13. That was program 3, chapter 7. Now we come to program 4, which is the restitution. The strategic objective of this program says restitution of land rights or award of alternative forms of equitable redress to claimants finalized within the MCF. And the performance indicators here are the number of land rights restituted or awards finalized. The target there is 380 for this year. And they want to do 110 quarter 1, 125 quarter 2, and they want to do 17 quarter 4. A very interesting indicator, there is number of land claims settled. We had committed that we would finalize those land claims that are in the process of being settled. So we target 133 for 2012. And then quarter 1, 40 land claims will be settled. 45 will be settled in quarter 2, 20 in quarter 3, 28 in quarter 4. Here, Chairperson, we have decided to also build into this an improved communication strategy because we realize that whilst we're doing a lot of work in settling of claims, we are not communicating effectively. So we want to make this process as transparent as possible so that the communities out there know what is outstanding, what has been settled, so that there is a demystification of the settling of land claims. Program 5 is land reform. The strategic objective there is strategically located land acquired and allocated. And the indicator is number of hectares acquired. The annual target is 321,122. Hectares divided into those quarters. Quarter 1, 60,281 hectares. The second strategic objective there is recapitalization and development, provided I talked about that. Let me just talk to the performance indicators now. Is number of new farms under recapitalization. The department is targeting 416 new farms under recapitalization this year. The other indicator is number of irrigation schemes under revitalization. The target there is 8 for this 2012 year. The last strategic objective there that is shared between this program and program 4, 3, and 4, skill development and sustainable economic opportunities created by 2014. This program also has got number of jobs created through land reform projects, and the target here is 288. And the last indicator is number of farms trained. The target for 2012 is 595, which is split amongst the four quarters, starting with just 140 in quarter one, and it's increasing up to 254 in quarter four. At the end of the year, we have trained 595 farmers. So that takes care of just the strategic objectives and the targets. I will hand over to the acting CFO to talk about the budget.
Are you saying we proceed with the budget? Oh, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson.
It looks like it's not mobile, but you can move it.
Thank you, Chairperson. The department has gone through the negotiation process through the MCF based on the targets that has been presented by DDG Mashia. We engaged. It's on slide number 22. I'll start on slide number 22. We have gone through the medium-term expenditure framework process with National Treasury. We had various engagements presenting our bids for the budget in order to deliver on the targets that has just been presented before you. In our 2010 estimate, we had estimated that in 2013, we will require around 9.7 billion. But we had engagements, we agreed on trade-off, and we ended up with a budget of allocated to us of 8.8 billion. So you'll see from the summary presentation there, that is at the end, we are more on the medium term. We are in the mid of the medium term strategic framework. If you look at the past audited outcomes, we have already spent as a department 19.6 billion. And going forward in the outer years, we are estimating to spend around 27.7 billion. So the slide that you see is how the framework of annual performance plan requires it. But from here, we also have an operational plan that details each and every demand of the task that DDG Mashia has presented, the cost drivers that goes with each and every activity, which provides more detail. But for the purpose of today, we are just showing you what is on the appropriation list, what has been allocated to us as an envelope to the department, and how, as a department, we have distributed it between the different programs. You will see that out of the 8.8 billion that has been allocated to the department, we've allocated 1 billion to administration. We've allocated 562 million to geospatial and cadastral services program. We've allocated 934 million to rural development. We have allocated 3 billion to restitution and 3.2 billion to land reform. The administration allocation goes with the annual performance plan that has just been presented, but we have put on more capacity to support provincial coordination, ensuring that there's capacity to support core business in the mandate of the department, including enterprise project management under administration. On geospatial and cadastral services, that's where we'll be doing the surveying. We have put on more capacity to ensure that the 2.7 million hectares of surveys they plan that they are planning to have can happen successfully. Rural development is allocated into two branches, which is our rural infrastructure development, two branches, which is our rural infrastructure development and our social facilitation unit. Included also in the rural development budget is the NARASEC budget, where we have seen some injection into the program that will help us to recruit more people in the rural NARASEC youth. Restitution, Chairperson, you'll remember that we had an issue with the budget of restitution. We engaged with Treasury. You will notice that from 2012 budget, it has increased from 2.4 billion. Now we have got an allocated budget in 2013 of 3 billion. Same with the land reform, there's not much change there. It's just a slight improvement on of inflation-related increases of 3.2 billion. So in a nutshell, this is the budget that has been allocated to the department that we await approval by the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. In concluding, Chairperson, as you will see, as the two presentations, both the APP that sets out the targets and the budget, a lot of money, nearly 20 billion rand, has been spent over the last 3 years, and we are looking at another 27 billion. But I want to, Chairperson, emphasize particular issues for the purposes of elaborating and clarifying certain things. By its very nature, the APP does not provide the kind of detail that the members would like to have to fill the details behind the numbers. One of the decisions we have taken between the department and the committee is that we will present quarterly reports to the committee at the end of each quarter, where below the high-level targets in the APP, we drill down to specific activities driving each one of the outcomes. Chairperson, we remain committed to that, so that the details that are not evident in the APP shall be presented in the operational plan of the department. We will, once the minister has signed off on it, submit to the committee the detailed operational plan behind all of these numbers, so that when we report, the committee can see that we are not making up these numbers as we go along. We can back them up. The committee can measure our performance and our budget expenditure against specific targets in the operational plan. That's the first part. Chairperson, there are quite a number of issues from emerging from the governance perspective in the department, specifically around the issues raised by the Auditor General. We've got an audit qualification around the issue of the accurate land register, but we've got emphasis of matter in the previous annual report and the Auditor General's report. We have raised the bar on this particular issue. We have committed the department to working toward a clean audit. So each and every one of us must be measured towards working to ensuring that the department has a clean audit, whether it relates to issues of a complete asset register, whether it relates to controls, information management systems. When we discuss and present the progress report in terms of operational plans, the members that look at our annual report should be able to say, are they making progress towards addressing those things in their annual report, so that we are not just sitting and waiting for the Auditor General to come back again and repeat the same findings. That's the commitment, Chairperson, we're making. With regard to restitution, Chairperson, we've made tremendous progress coming from where we come from. You'll recall that there had to be a major budget adjustment 2 years ago. We had to take 2 billion rand away from land reform and give it to restitution to offset a shortfall as a result of commitments we had made. We have far less
court orders an interest against the department charge today than we had a year and 2 years ago. We want to continue on that trend and improve in the management of the restitution process and the communication with the stakeholders in the restitution process, both the claimants and the landowners who are affected by claims. This should be very obvious when we discuss the operational plan and the report of the department when we present to the committee. On rural development, there are issues that the members raised last year with regard to NARISEC, the extent to which they are engaged. We have over 7,000 youngsters engaged in our program. Over 4,000 of them have been to FET colleges. They have been trained in skills such as construction, plumbing, electrification, and so on. We have established a number of programs to keep them fully engaged in the program, up to a point where we create enterprises in the form of cooperatives at a primary, at a secondary, and at a tertiary level, where these NARISEC youth exit the program of the department and form some kind of enterprises if they don't get employed by businesses out there. That's the long term. Eliminating and reducing the dependency on the stipends that we pay them. Chairperson, the policy and the legislative reforms we are proposing, we have to put our cards on the table to this committee. The policy and legislative reforms that we are proposing, which we presented earlier on in the Green Paper, if approved by this parliament, are going to have far-reaching financial implications. The current budget that we have is not going to be sufficient to stomach the demand fiscally of implementing. Very soon, we are hoping that Parliament is going to be debating and hopefully approving the land use, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill, which has been submitted to the chairperson of the Council of Provinces, so that we meet the deadline of the Constitutional Court of the 17th of June this year. We have a bill that is passed, but it is going to require massive resources to implement it. The Office of the Valuer General is going to require resources. The Land Management Commission is going to require resources. Regulating ownership of land in South Africa by foreigners, if the policy and the legislation is passed, is going to require resources. So we hope that we'll work very closely with this committee so that we have the necessary and requisite resources to enable us to implement the program. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, here is an opportunity to engage with the submission. Angolele, to also thank the department on the strategic plan that presented to the portfolio committee. But maybe, Chair, let me just begin on probably the vision that we've defined as the department being establishing vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities. And again, Chair, in an attempt to try and understand the work we do, have we, since our inception, achieved the vision that we set out? We have these pilot projects that we've put out, but when will we stop regarding them as pilots? Finally, say that yes, here's something that could be looked at, measured, and tested, and presented as
one of the achievements by the department. Chair, my second question is really posed at the integrated land planning and spatial information and administration systems, which the objectives set by the department here. And from what we've seen in the past is that the department doesn't really have a coordinated a system in place. If you look at the Mhlonhlo, there were many things that were being done and being done by other departments, but seemingly there's no holistic approach to this. Where can the department show us one of such a place which has a holistic approach and has everything set out as an integrated plan to that? Chair, I think on the third question is really an issue of land claims, which have had an impact, a negative impact towards development. Specifically, if we talk of the Eastern Cape in Mthatha, a municipality finds itself deadlocked with land claims, which are now in court. What is being done as far as resolving that? Bear with me slightly, Chairs. I have two or three more questions. Here on Program 1 administration, it speaks of an audit of management action plans, which in the first quarter we were targeting 25%. Have we met our target? And if so, when were the assessments done, Chair?
Ensure productivity. I'd like the department to tell us
what they believe is key to ensuring productivity, sustainable, ensuring productivity. A short definition of what we'll define that. And then, Chair, all these figures, we will interrogate and we will get the reports and we'll compare to last year and we'll put the department through its paces. But I just wonder whether these figures are actually crafted with historical performance taken into account. Because if they're not, Chair, you're also setting yourselves up for failure. I mean, we went through a process not long ago where we discovered that the department hadn't met its own performance objectives. Most of the programs were performing at under 50% or around 50%, which is failure. And we're setting ourselves some seriously high targets here. So historical capacity must be taken into account. My few questions are capacity of surveyors, qualification and availability. Are these figures realistic? Because my experience is that we don't have capacity and qualified number of people that will make these targets successful. That's the first one. Chairperson, the restitution targets, are they based on actual restitution claims, or are they just a figure that you ballpark and say we want to do this? Because if they're not based on actual claims, then there's going to be a problem. The revitalization of irrigation schemes. What is the department doing to ensure that revitalization is a once-off and not a perennial activity? So we can't perennially revitalize irrigation schemes. And my last question is training farmers. Where are we going to train those 595 farmers? Because that is key to successful and sustainable
across all the programs, oh no, not all the programs, that is program one, in rural development and then reform policies and education development, you have not set yourself targets quarterly. You have, there's no target in quarter one, quarter two, quarter three. My question is it wise, because your only target now is in quarter four. You haven't said it quarterly, the target. So is it wise, is it really wise for you not to set this quarterly target as they have done in other programs? It also applies to program three, provide well households and, you know, and able to improve their food security. Even there, you have not set your targets in quarter one and quarter two. You know, much as also in skills development and sustainable economic opportunities. You know, in strategic goals and objectives, that is page 5 in our document, strategic goal number 3. We are saying the effective land planning and trade that is biased towards rural areas. Have you started this planning? I am really concerned about this because my constituency is in rural areas. Have you started about this planning? Becomes relevant, Honorable Chairperson, even though it is in our document. In the recapitalization under land reform, there were some shortcomings that you experienced. What are you doing to attend to that? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the plan as presented by the department, but God was Chairperson, although the operational plan is going to be tabled to the committee, but when looking at the plan, there's no consistency. I'll just refer to a few examples. Under Program 2, Geospatial, the 2.1, whereby the department has indicated in quarter 1, 2, 3, 4, what is it that's going to be done. Then you compare it to the number of legislations that are going to be tabled in Parliament. It's just the figures at the end. So when looking at the plan, somewhere you tell us in quarter one that this is what we're going to do. In quarter two, this is what we're going to do. In quarter three, this is what you're going to do. But in other programs, you just indicate the numbers at the end of the last quarter. That is why I'm saying it's not consistent, although we are saying the operational plan is coming. Chair, on the revitalization of the irrigation schemes, I think it's a good idea, especially in rural areas, because it will improve production, although there's a shortage of water in most of the areas. But do you work with the Department of Agriculture to avoid the duplication? Because the CASP grant is used also for the revitalization of this irrigation schemes. Then the other one is on the, you are saying you're going to roll out CRDP into 22 prioritized areas. When you roll this CRDP, there's this council of stakeholders that you use to establish, to link the department with the community. But the challenge, I think, that you have to take into consideration the capacity of this council of stakeholders. I think they need to be thoroughly trained. The example of their Dalao. I think there were challenges that has been identified there. Then in line with that, Chairperson, through the CRDP, the infrastructural development, the time taken, it's good to build houses, there's integrated development in rural areas, build houses, you build schools, you build the sporting facilities, but the time taken to hand over those facilities to the communities, in the Adalawa, there are houses that were vandalized because of the time taken to allocate beneficiaries or to hand over the projects to the communities. I think that is also one challenge that needed to be addressed. CRDP is a good project that is aimed at improving the rural livelihood of the people. This South African Council of Planners, my first time to see it. Can it be unpacked? The composition? What is it that they're doing? Because there's an allocation of 2.7, if I'm not mistaken. To whom are they accountable? So that we know which is Babu Bani. DG, on this, on the NARISEC. NARISEC is a good program. We agree. But maybe just to check whether do you engage the private sector and other client departments so that after the training, you know, those students can be used by the Department of Health to maintain, you know, to do maintenance, my clinics, fixing of roads, you know, cleaning of the yards, plumbing, whatsoever, so that at the end of the day, this program has got an impact in changing the lives of the young people. I understand the co-ops, but you can establish the co-ops, but if those people don't have access to the tenders or whatever, then at the end of the day, they will be co-ops forever. But if you link them, you know, you have this agreement with the client department so that they can absorb them after the training to assist in those departments. The last one, the 3 billion. To secure the 133. Are you going to be able to meet the target with the allocation? Thanks. Oh, sorry. The last one, the overusage of the percentage. I always raise this. Which is sometimes, you know, the overusage, it confuses us when we are doing a monitoring. For instance, if you're saying 10% on the vacant funded pools, 10% of one, I think the specific figures will assist that in the first quarter, out of this post, if there are 100 vacant posts, we're going to fill 5. Then we know which is the filler 5 posts. But if it's percentage, you know, it really confuses us. Yes, and as if we're confused, we're saving some of my tactics. So that then we are in the first quarter, the year which have appointed 3. Then this is a woman because we don't know with the 10% of one. So I think the overusage of percentages is sometimes confused. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable
Mr. Chair, the fellow members has touched on most of the things. It would have been a good guide if we had the estimates or the achievements of the previous year, because the amounts allocated doesn't differ substantially. If you had, on the one hand, achievements for 2011, and this is a target for the next year, then we can ask, did you achieve? And the figure now is an increase. Will it be possible to achieve the next target? I mean, we've got jobs created, access to skills 3,200, number of jobs created 2,900. Isn't it the same people and so on, which was actually in the previous year? Will it be new people? Did you achieve your previous target? The NARISEC, I mean, yeah, there outside we find that the people get the stipend doing nothing. As the previous speaker said, they could have been used or they can be used to do work in the community, to uplift the community. The food gardens, for 11, 12, 900 was established. are they really productive? Are they productive? We are going to have 1,800 food gardens again. Are they helping in the food supply or need of the people? Or was it just gardens started and money spent and nothing? There's actually nothing going on there. So you can go through the whole program. If there was the achievements or what was the target for the previous year and what was achieved the previous year and the target this year, then you can look to the that was done. Is it really going to be possible to achieve the target of the this financial year? Thank you.
Thank you. DG, maybe.
Thank you, Sven. Mine is a very short one, and the previous speakers touched on it. Maybe I want to just put in a new book to make sure that we're talking about integration. Previously, we couldn't get all stakeholders or role players. How are we going to make sure now this integration really, really takes place? I know it's difficult, but because without the other stakeholders, must treat us differently. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe just to follow up on the question raised by Honorable Trollen on the shortage of surveyors, Chair. I think from my concern would be if we are targeting to, in the first quarter, have 800,000 hectares of land surveyed, especially in the homeland. How is that spread out per province, DG? And also, if you look at some of the targets set out by the department to train 60 geometrics in the year, how are these spread out? Some of us come from rural communities, Chair, and we would like to understand what would be done in those areas. There are a total of 60 rural communities which will be also assisted with agricultural infrastructure. How are these spread out through the different provinces? I, for one, coming from the Eastern Cape, the department says one thing in Parliament, but if you go on the ground and you find the MEC regarding herself as the implementer in these communities and holding 72 tractors to herself and not dispersing them to the communities, then it says a different language. Is the department becoming an implementer or are the communities implementing for themselves? Thanks.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We anticipated, Chairperson, this robust engagement from the members, but we are also happy that there is also positive sentiment coming on the part of the members. I will deal with some of the questions, but I will distribute them also to my colleagues. Honorable Mandela, on the vision. Our vision is a long-term statement. This administration is only midway in term of office. We have not yet seen
the vibrant and equitable, sustainable rural communities yet, in all instances where we've been involved. But we've made some progress. We have long also moved away from pilots now. The CRDP is the program. Every site we're involved in, we don't regard them as pilots anymore. I will ask my colleague, as I distribute the question, colleague who is in DDG, Leona Achari, to deal with the question of the coordinated approach in the provinces with regard to the CRDP, because she's leading in the department. With regard to the negative impact of restitution, particularly in the Eastern Cape, there's a high-level focus. Let me just be specific for a moment in the Eastern Cape. There's a team led by the president himself with regard to the development of the Eastern Cape. And there's a technical team led by the Director General in the President, Dr. Cassius Libisi, and we are a member of that technical committee. We have got our team on the ground all the time dealing with the issue of land claims in Mthatha. We do know that a large part of Mthatha is under claim. The issues are quite complex. They are not very easy. We will not exaggerate. There is a high-level team that involves us, the municipality, and the claimants to try and find a negotiated settlement around these claims. Some of them have already been to court. The court has pronounced on some of them. But as parties, we are trying to say, how do we give effect to the order of the court? On some of them, there are appeals in court against some of the claims by several parties. So we are fully engaged. That's the approach, Chair, we adopt, where there is a potential for restitution hampering development. We dispatch teams to focus and work in a collaborative fashion with other stakeholders. Honorable Tolik, thank you for the positive comments on our attempt of at this plan will get better and better. We take note of the comment we're making with regard to the risk of not getting Parliament approving the special planning and land use management bill in time, because there will be a lacuna in terms of processing of development applications. If this does not happen, there are two options. Obviously, if there is an option of approaching the Constitutional Court to ask for an extension, but we are also aware that we are not guaranteed automatic extension by the Constitutional Court. But also we are working with the provinces in terms of bringing other pieces of legislation. I think there's been an analysis by the department looking at how many development applications countrywide are processed through the DFA that has been struck as unconstitutional. We still find that municipalities still use old ordinances to process applications. So it's not like development will really ground to a halt because there's this lacuna. But we're not finding comfort in that. We're saying we are working with provinces. We do know that there are some provinces that have got legislation in place, like the Western Cape, KZN, and Gauteng. But we're working with others as well to bring about that legislation in place. I think there's a part that I will ask later on Dr. Mahaleme to speak to. I think Vusi Mahlangu will discuss the issue of productivity. What we mean by productivity with regard to implementation of RECAP. The Chief Surveyor General will discuss
respond on the shortage of surveyors and all the questions that relate to that. Registration targets indeed are based on existing claims that can be named, broken down in the province. Wusimasa will speak to the irrigation of revitalization of irrigation schemes and the training of the farmers, where and by whom. DDG Mashia will discuss the setting of the targets as asked by Honorable Dapane, including the question asked by Honorable Ngonye Mabila also, generally on target setting, lack of consistency that has been raised, the shortcomings of recap, what is being done, Mr. Masang will respond to that. On the 23 districts, the time that has been taken to hand over, Jadalawa, acting DDG Achari, will respond to that. SEC plan, Dr. Makhalemele will respond to that. NARISEC, the role of private sector and other client departments, acting DDG Achari, as she's driving the infrastructure development in collaboration with other departments, she will also respond to that. Honorable Van der Linde, I would like to refer you to page 29 of the APP, where we are referring not on the PowerPoint presentation, but on this document, where we are reflecting achievements of the previous financial year in relation to the targets we are setting for the current year. Dr. Swart will respond to the question whether this council will establish whether they are working or not. Dr. Swart will also respond to the question by Honorable November regarding the integration and coordination role and the role of other stakeholders. Dr. Swartz is fresh from a very thorough planning exercise that is looking at repositioning the department insofar as claiming this space. The chairperson has said we must not be shy to claim the space. We are a department established by government precisely to coordinate efforts of government in the rural space. What are we going to do? That's the question. Dr. Swartz will respond to that. The Chief Surveyor General on the shortage of surveyors, the training of the 60 people in geomatics, he will respond to that. And the 60 rural communities, DDG Archery. And then finally, DDG Archery also on the role of the provinces in rural development. Thank you very much.
I was going to start by saying that the targets are set based on the previous year's performance. We consider that it's just in the presentation we took just a 1 year plan. But if you look into the annual assessment, then you see that we put the actual performance of the previous year and then we set the target for the year. To answer Honorable Ngonye Mabila's question, I think let us acknowledge that Honorable Mumba is right in her observation that there is inconsistency, but also explain that what we have done, the Honorable Mumba, is that we've taken the milestones of the e-cadastre as a major project and we lifted them up to a program level. So remember, there are performance indicators for programs that are milestones that are measuring performance for the program. Now, e-cadastre is a project, but because it's a flagship project of the department, we've lifted it and put it as the program. This is why now we say in quarter one, we'll have done this. Those are actually milestones, they're not indicators. This is why it is confusing. If you look at the planning framework, the stage 13 of the planning framework, there's a treasury guideline 2010, not the planning framework. The planning framework actually says where is the place of the milestone in the plan, in the annual performance plan. So the milestone is at the level where it has captured in the performance agreement and the operational plan. So So what we did with the ICADA, so that is supposed to be at the base at the lower level, we put it like it's a program and put the milestone as indicators. This is what has caused confusion. It's because ICADA is a major project that is costing a lot of budget for the department. So it was not supposed to be captured like that in the plan. So we will correct that. Those milestones were supposed to appear in the operational plan at a lower level. So this is why you are confused. The principle that we have used for the annual performance plan, where there's dash, quarter one, quarter two, is because the milestones for the policy and legislation are at an activity level. We wanted to first appoint, there's been no chief director for policy in the department. There's been actually no staff. So there are low-level milestones that we first wanted to take care of, you know, capacitating the policy unit, appointing people, having the plan. So those are low-level things that we do as a department that we didn't want to capture them in the plan. But we wanted to say at the end of the year, we have at least table 10 pieces of legislation. So because, again, in terms of the technical aspect of planning, they wanted to say numbers, quarter one, what will we have achieved? Quarter two. So quarter one, we didn't know what would have achieved because we wanted to establish the unit. But we know that at the end of the year, we'll have at least finalized those pieces of legislation. So we take that comment and would rather make sure that the plan is consistent throughout to avoid confusion. The second thing, the misuse of targets. Can we just check, maybe recommend that for reporting to the committee, let us report in numbers. Because remember, the indicators, they are not just for the committee. There are specific reports that we have to submit elsewhere. So the vacancy rate, you report in terms of the percentage. That we cannot change that. But we can, for the committee, say in the staff establishment, we've got 4,700 employees. So we make sure that we do not have less by 20 people. That's 4,700. So for the committee, we can agree to just put it in raw figures and percentage. We can do that because at the operational plan, it's actually very activities. We can do that.
In terms of the questions, I think a number of the questions around the coordination within the 23 districts that we're trying to do now will respond to this issue of the coordinated approach and our plan in terms of moving into those 23 districts. I think when we first started to roll out the CRDP, the idea was indeed to utilize the Council of Stakeholders as the body that would assist in terms of the development approach, community-based development approach that we want to follow. Now, we're still using the same principles, and if we look at where November asked the question around where have we seen this integrated planning approach actually working at the moment. And I think that when we first started in Moesha, for example, it's one area where it has worked. We saw numbers of different government departments coming together, as well as private sector, with the community in terms of driving that community-based plan that had been developed with the community. So it means that it can work. Now, what we've tried to do, it's also worked in Dasselsdorp already, in the Western Cape, and in some of the other places where we originally piloted. Now, what we're trying to do is adopt an approach, again, of the same kind of integration at a district level, because we believe that if we can get it right at the district level, in aligning also with the IDPs, of the country properly, but making sure that whatever plans are committed to are having capacity of those relevant government departments, but also commitment in terms of resources of budget for that. So what we are working towards now is adopting a business plan, a rural development business plan per district in terms of those 23 identified by cabinet. And obviously then that will flow down back into the wards and the localized communities that we're working with. And the councils of stakeholders will still be the development vehicle that will be used at that community and local municipality and district level in terms of managing that. What we want to end up with at the end of the day is basically a dashboard of all interventions planned for a particular district. And at the moment, there is a task team that is set up between the national departments, the provincial departments, as well as all of the district municipalities in terms of those 23. And there's a technical team as well as a team made up up in terms of MECs, mayors, and ministers in terms of how we are managing that. We have been utilizing the CSIR in terms of helping with the development of those plans. So it's about looking also at the potential of those different areas, finding firstly the catalytic projects, but at the same time dealing with issues of basic human needs and enterprise development, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a whole range of issues that we are going to be bringing together in terms of that. Yes, indeed, I would think that, and Didi Swat also will know that in terms of the Council of Stakeholders, the idea in terms of capacitating those people, making sure they are trained and skilled with the requirements in terms of helping us manage delivery at that particular level. In terms of the linkage then, again, with the communities that have been identified, the 60 communities across the country, in terms of agricultural infrastructure, they come from all of the 9 provinces, a focus on the provinces where the 23 districts have been situated. They cover various aspects linked to agricultural infrastructure, including, for example, fencing, stock water systems, cattle handling facilities, etc., etc. These communities have already been identified through the process where status quo reports have already been done and community profiling of those wards have already been done. And there is a detailed list of that that we can make available of where those projects will happen in the country. With regard to the time taken in terms of handing over the assets, I think that was Ms. Mabila, a example of what has happened in Dietalawa. It's about making sure that when we are working with our partners in the province, because this was a project that was implemented with the provincial human settlements in the Free State, and making sure that all of the facilitation, etc., before the assets are completed have been done. And in this particular case, there was a slight delay in handing over, but those houses were eventually handed over, and provincial government has taken responsibility in terms of that particular delay. But I think the idea is to make sure that all of the partners in this process are correctly aligned, and that is the plan that I was talking to earlier. Indeed, the rural development program, in the manner that I've spoken about, is being rolled out to all of the provinces, and the role of the provinces in the program is clearly articulated in the CRDP management system, where the MECs for rural development in all of the provinces are the political oversight at a provincial level. In KZN, that function has now been moved to the Premier's office, and that is where rural development will be managed. What we do in all the cases is work with the officials from that department in terms of the work that will be done in a province. But again, the key of working with the district municipalities and that particular department, which is the 9 function department accountable in a province, is important. What we have been finding is certain challenges at a provincial level in terms of that coordination between the provincial sector departments and the department that is coordinating at the province. Obviously, they work very closely then with our own provincial departments of rural development and land reform. But the bodies that we've used to institutionalize this is obviously the CRDP delivery forums, coming down from the district level up until the national level. And the challenges that we've identified in the last financial year, we've been trying to deal with now in the current financial year in terms of making sure that there is a continuity in terms of the people who are represented even in the structure. Thanks, Chair. I think I'll just wonder.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Member, respond to the question asked by Honorable Ngwenya Mabila on the South African Council of Planners. The Council of the South African Council of Planners is established in terms of the Planning Profession Act, I think it's Act of 2002, so it is a statutory body. It is responsible for regulating the planning profession and also just to transform the profession, because previously planning was only offered at previously white institutions, and so the people who were within the profession were mainly white at a time. And then it's also responsible for the registration of members, and it's got several committees like the disciplinary committee, registration committee, finance committee, and other committees. And then the composition is made out of government officials, those in the the private practice and civil society who act as the public protector, in other words, to ensure that the planning practice is within or protects the interests of the public. And then this body is accountable to the minister, they report directly to the minister, and we've got a MOA, a memorandum of agreement with them to say they need to report to the minister on a quarterly basis, and then out of this budget of 2,700, we also divide it quarterly so that once they give us those reports, then if we're satisfied with them, then we give them the allocation. So our responsibility in terms of the memorandum of agreement is to actually offer them financial and technical support. So we have also three members of our staff serving on that council and also on the appeals board. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. What I can do, no. Thanks, Chair, and thanks, DG. I want to respond to the issue of insufficient surveyors. I would agree with the Honorable Trollett that, yes, there is a shortage of surveyors in South Africa. Not only for the department, but for the country at large. I mean, if one could share the statistics with the committee, you'd see that we need to do more. However, we do have a long-term strategy as a department to address that. We're currently having over 210 students that are sponsored by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, studying geomatics at various technicons and institutions. Actually, over 85% of students that are currently studying surveying in South Africa are sponsored by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. Coupled with that is the training. The in-house training that Dunkosi has referred to regarding the spread, the training of survey officers that we now call geomatics officers. That's an in-house training where we expose matriculants to the industry itself so that we prepare them if they want to pursue, actually we encourage them to pursue a career in survey. So that is done in-house. We started the program in 2008 where we recruited 75 and they graduated 2 years later, and then we have the second group that is graduating in June, 60 of them. that are spread across all the provinces in all the Surveyor General's offices, including Eastern Cape, although they were not trained in Eastern Cape, because we recently opened the Surveyor General office in East London last year. So they were trained here in Cape Town, but they were recruited from the Eastern Cape. But funny enough, they don't want to go back home. So we will be taking 60 again pupil geomatics officers in July, and our target this year, in line with the department's mandate, is to recruit in rural areas. We are battling to do that. We have been battling to do that for the long-term strategy of the department in getting people to study, you know, surveying across the country, but we do not lose hope. So for the geomatics officers, we'll be recruiting direct from the rural areas. In terms of the capacity to deliver the unsurveyed state land, We have since, you know, revised the way we procuring the services. Remember, Chair, we don't do the surveys in house. We utilize the services of private land surveyors out there. The first batch that we surveyed, it took quite a while because the bids were organized in such a way that, you know, it was big blocks, and we had few companies and certain, you know, individual land surveyors, you know, winning those bids, and their estimation, you know, of completing the surveys, I think they underestimated actually completion of the surveys. So we have then now decided to break these blocks into smaller groups. That would make us utilize more private land surveyors. Hence, we are confident that we will be able to finish the surveys as per the plan. Although we do know we're going to have a challenge, but we're going to try our best because we have to survey Kruger National Park, the entire Kruger National Park. So it's a big challenge there. Exactly. But we have to do that because certain pockets of Kruger National Park are not surveyed. I think I have covered. Okay, thank you.
Dr. Schwartz? I'm not taking over.
I'm going to be responding, Chair, to two questions. One raised on the capacity building or the councils of stakeholders. And the second one is, are these food gardens productive?
Are they of any value to rural people? These are the two questions I'm going to respond to. The first, Chairperson, is work done in response to strategy goal number 4 of integrated institutional arrangements for effective cooperative governance and stakeholder participation. The councils of stakeholders are key participants in the design of projects for rural development. They are key participants in responding to the privatization of all of the projects that come out as a result of us having done a door-to-door profiling of households. Indeed, what we have realized is that to be able to make these decisions, we need to train the Council of Stakeholders, and we have therefore Mamabila put them through various capacity building courses in skills development. In the past year, hopefully we will come and show this committee how throughout the 9 provinces, people from the Council of Stakeholders have participated in courses such as the ability to manage projects, the ability to manage finances. I think there's about three of these courses that we put them through. In as far as the food gardens, we are not making the progress and making the gains we would love to with the food gardens. Indeed, we started with 900 in the country, 100 in each province. We have been, the work has been bedeviled by the lack of water, which is why we had to appoint service providers to ensure that we use systems such as the drip irrigation systems for making sure that water is used frugally. Each household, for instance, has been given a minimum of 5,000 liters of a Jojo tank in places, for instance, like Diatalawa and Mahulukwe, where there is a scarcity of water. And collaboration into getting water, for instance, regularly delivered where pipes are very far from the gardens themselves is still a struggle. These gardens having targeted only 100 households, for instance, out of a ward that has got over 2,500 households, have indeed produced food, and we have got evidences, and we can share these evidences, for instance, in places like Etiadalawa, where people are given a minimum of 1,000 square meters of vegetable garden. We're not able to consume all the food. As a result, communities themselves were able to then secure, for instance, with checkers in the town of Harry Smith, some contracts for delivering fresh vegetables. In areas like Ceres in Württemberg, for instance, those households that received food were able to circulate food to various destitute households in the communities. We missed in an area, for instance, like Ceres, a contract from Woolworths, because we established a garden very close to a sewage pipe, and Woolworths would not want to give us an offtake agreement, I mean, for those vegetables. A 6 by 12 meter container, for instance, was packed full of butternuts, packed full of onions. And the communities told us, look, the nearest market, you know, having to go to Cape Town, you know, we don't have a car, we don't have a buggy to take all of this food. And so what we said to them, look, we are taking you through the first phase of the CRTP, which is really food security, food that you are not able to consume yourselves and take to the market, distribute to destitute families, using the Council of Stakeholders, because you know which households, you know, sometimes go without food in your own communities. So we are encouraging them, because the aim is really food security and food safety and food sovereignty. So indeed, we are going to be expanding from the 900 this year to 1,800. We've learned mistakes. We are moving away just for a blanket food food gardens. We are now moving to livelihood project, for instance, in the Northern Cape, where households, you know, can do well, for instance, in goats. We will not go and do gardens, you know, where there's no water, and where beef it will do well, where poultry, where piggery, like outside here in Begweni, does well. We will look more closely to relate to the environment in a particular community. Thank you.
My time will check this. Thanks, Tishu. Thanks, Person. The response were, there was a question around the productivity of the farms. What do you mean by productivity? The recapitalization and development was it's meant to assist all those farms that were acquired since 1994 because of the lack of support. Basically, it's meant to ensure productivity production in the farm, also for issues of food security, skills development, capacity building, and all that stuff. But if we have to drill down to what is productivity, basically the model is designed in such a way that you don't only make a farm farmable, but you provide the necessary infrastructure, you ensure that there's production in the farm, you also ensure the access to the market, whereby after the production of whatever is in the farm, each the beneficiary should be able to access the market to take it to the market up until to the retail so that they can generate income. So it's the entire full value chain. If I can make an example, maybe with two commodities. Let's take, for instance, in livestock. In livestock, we are saying we'll capacitate the farmers with a cattle, a good breed that is needed for the retail purposes. That will make sure, will also make sure that he access the feedlot, whereby you make sure that he fattens and he can have a breed, a good breed of those cattle, and then they will go up until to the abattoir, up until they got slaughtered. So we mentor them throughout the process so that at the end of the day, you are not stuck with good cattle in your farm, but you don't know where you, where to take to. For instance, in the sugarcane, we ensure that we enter, we do productivity on the farm. We ensure that they access even the transport market, whereby they supply the cane to the miller. They also, in terms of phase two, they have shares in the mill themselves, so that at the end of the day, their products can be sold through the retail. So the entire value chain market is not only just productivity or on the farm. Then related to that, there was a question that I will jump to that talks to the shortcomings under capitalization and development. When we started with the recap, it was mainly kind of a pilot just to test how best the model can be. We are busy finalizing the new version of the recapitalization and development policy, whereby we are using the lessons learned on the ground and then improving on that. The shortcomings basically is that we were very unlucky. We couldn't attract the genuine strategic partners. If you look at the model itself, it talks about the risk sharing. It talks about people who believe in this business and invest in it, put their own equity. But we've hardly since come across those people, but we've attracted just people who want to do business and catch up. Also, we've also realized shortcomings in the own department that we don't have agricultural economists that covers the broader spectrum of commodities. For instance, specialists in the livestock, specialists in poultry, specialists in sugarcane or other crops. We are trying also to beef up capacity in the department so that people can be, our product officers can be able to assist these farmers so that they are not taken for the ride by the strategic partners. We also noted that the strategic partners in this case, they basically become the new bosses of these farms, especially where they are not monitored. And we are working closely with our project management team. We are receiving reports as to how why all of a sudden, whilst we ask the strategic partners to train, develop our farmers, but they basically behave as if now they own the farm and the beneficiaries become spectators. So the shortcomings that we can take the whole day going through all of them, but we acknowledge those shortcomings and we are working on them. Then there was also a question around who do we work with? Do we work with DAF or other provincial departments? Yes, for the success of the recap and development, we work jointly with the DAF. We also work with the provincial departments in the provincial in the provinces to ensure that they take over a certain portion of the things that we cannot afford as a national department. There was also a question around the 60 rural communities that were reflected under land reform. I think my colleague has responded to that when she was talking to the rural infrastructure. But just to emphasize that land reform in the new CRDP concept is not only focusing on acquiring land, but we also look at assisting through the animal and self management in those rural areas, the communal land where they are organized, so that you provide them with the infrastructure, keeping tanks and silos and whatever is necessary in that is related to the land. So far, we've identified about 60 of these rural communities. Then the training of farmers, the 595, there's two prongs here. What we are, part of the recapitalization and development deliverables by the strategic partners, they must ensure that they capacitate those beneficiaries that they assist in the farm, not only in farming, but also in soft skills like financial management, booking, and up until they assist them in forming their cooperatives, if it's possible, because we also talk of clustering of these commodities in the areas. But we also saying that we want to enforce a new way of beneficiary selection, where we wanted to make it, we want to give preference maybe to our NARISEC youth, especially those with the agricultural background, so that as the NARISEC component make an impact on this youth, we know exactly that some of them, we can deploy them to this farm so that they can be active, they can train into agriculture. We're playing around that, and also we want to make it compulsory to say, even if it's a beneficiary who's becoming an applicant, but there must be that link for him or her to empower this youth that the department is taking through the other program, which is NARISEC. Then the irrigation schemes and the perennial activities. I think here it's a question of planning. If you look at all the irrigation schemes that we are involved currently, we actually piggybacking on the activities of DAF and the provincial agricultural departments as well as local municipalities. So with proper planning, I don't foresee any perennial activities as the members alluded, but we will all jointly discuss the plans and what are the resources that are needed there and then agree upon or appoint there. It's difficult to put a once-off investment in an irrigation scheme because it talks of infrastructure and it talks of a number of hectares and other things that are related to that, such as agro-processing and all the stuff. But we look at the business plan and consider it appropriately and then take it from there. That's basically the question that we refer to land reform. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DJ. Now the next stage will be to look at how we engage with each other so that we can present the budget in the House. The sector here was raising the question about the date. You have been told about the 4th of May. We have been told about the 10th of May. And both those dates are not suitable for this committee to be ready for the debate. Because there is a, what is that rule called? Rule 4. The three-day rule, where if we are going to have this process unfolding to enable us to debate the budget in the House, we need enough time to get all the information necessary and table the report to be ready for the debate. We wish the DG could then consult with the minister. We will discuss this with the... There's a whip in the House that, which is regarded as a programming whip. I've spoken to the House Chair, and the House Chair said that I must approach the House, the programming whip. But for us to be able to do that, your consultation with the minister is crucial so that we are agreeing on the date. We should have a common date. I think the committee, if we look at the unfolding program that we set ourselves, we would meet the 17th of May, which is the earliest date for us to go to the House and present the report and the budget. So if you could consult with him, it may have been him who requested the 4th of May, consult with the minister and inform us by the end of business today. If that was his wish, if it is his wish, ask him whether he could reconsider so that we can have the 17th as a joint date for all parties. Because for us to unfold our program, the manner in which we have been proposed in the circulated draft program, we need not only the members of this committee to debate on the information given, but also to interact with stakeholders like you do in the department. We do not want, it's like those people who play rugby or soccer. If you don't train during the week and wake up on Saturday morning and go play, you are in a position, you are likely to break a leg or dislocating some part of your body. We do not want any of these members here to break any leg in the House. There's a huge risk of breaking a leg in the House if you did not read the document. Because you did not read the document. So it's important. But also to allow the department, the committee, not only to have a position, collective position as the committee. Remember that we as a committee must formulate a collective position as the committee. That will be a result of interaction and debate among ourselves, whether we come from any party, we represent the nation. Rural development and land reform is a national responsibility. You hear the members talking about my province, my constituency, but they prioritize those within the context of a national responsibility that this committee has. But we should not have to go to the House with a committee position only. We must interact with the department as well, so that the department and the committee, if we are not agreeable to everything, at least we have sufficient consensus. on the issues for your budget and your APP. So it will help us a great deal. I'm belaboring the point because I think it must be clear to everybody that we are not operating as individuals, we are operating collectively. We have a responsibility as this community to guide the nation. If we don't interact with the documentation, who are we going to guide? You can't guide yourself. How can you guide the nation? The second issue relating to this debate on this budget is that we are going to locate, like you said, DG, in your summary at the end of the presentation on the green paper, we must locate this debate on the budget in the context of the capacity of the department to deliver on these plans, but we must do so in the context of understanding what you have been doing in the previous financial year. Because you see, like Honorable Tony was saying, the road to hell, I don't know the road to hell, but it says it's full of good intentions. Now I'm not interested in good intentions because as a committee, we are mandated to play oversight role on your actions. Good intentions are a reference point only. We must check your actions. So these plans, which tell us that your actions are that direction, we must pursue you, we must follow you wherever you go so that we can see your actions, they relate to the good intentions. We, in that regard, we have plans to meet with various bodies and groups. But we have been asking members over the past 3 weeks to go to their constituencies, so that they can come back to the house and say, your good intention in the Northern Cape is not good enough, because this is what is actually happening on the ground. Don't come and tell us about the good intention, tell us about what you're doing there. So there are so many outstanding matters which will influence our debate on the budget. So, DG, we also have to look at the legislative process or program. You said yourself, a piece of legislation is asking the parliament to give you a mandate to undertake a particular task in a particular policy framework. That's what the legislation is all about. And every piece of legislation has to be accompanied, like you said, with money, because there is no way you will do anything without money. They say, Mr. Bacot, my partner, they say, funds follow functions. So we pass the legislation here in the House. When you have no money, how can you implement it? So we will pursue this debate with you collectively so that we can then move forward. I know that there are outstanding questions on the answers you have provided. But you remember there was a singer a long time ago, so some of you were not born then. I'm sure Mr. Pandolinde was born at that time. He's closer to my age. It says there are more questions than answers. So we can continue asking you questions every time you ask us. Then it becomes an interrogation. It's not like a meeting. So we can't continue with answering questions now. This meeting must come to an end so that you can go and eat. And after eating, you're attending the session at 2. There's a session at 2 tomorrow for members of this committee constituted by, I'm not counting the people who are absent, because I cannot trust whether they will come tomorrow. I must flog the host that is pulling the wake up. So it will be Ngos Mandela, Mama November, Mama Ngwenya Mabila, Christopher Ndalinde, and for now, they will go and debate the relationship or the interaction between or among climate change, MDGs, and sustainable development. that we know now that the accepted policies of the government on MDGs, we know that there is an internationally accepted document on climate change. We also know that there was an international conference in Durban on sustainable development. So the members are meant to go and debate in the House tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Don't ask me why I make this announcement now, because my responsibility is to tell you when I have the information. When I don't have it, I can't give it to you. So I have to ask these members to go and attend the dialogue. Read. The internet is full of information. Excuse me. She wants it in English. What?
Oh,
guess what? No.
English.
You speak English in this committee. But you are allowed to speak any language of your choice. Honorine, please. You are part of the team that goes there. We are as members. Can you go ahead?
I beg to be corrected. You're talking about a debate in the House.
I didn't hear the word.